This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to Full Rigor, a Florida true crime podcast. I am your host, Karen Curtis.
Yes, I'm back. And if you're a faithful Full Rigor fan, thank you for hanging on and continuing to subscribe, because I've had a year off. I've got a lot of unbelievable, shocking Florida true crime to bring your way. I missed you, by the way. So buckle up, lock it in. Full Rigor is back. This week, we're looking at an unbelievable new story that's out of the University of Florida. They just published a paper that appeared in the Nature, Ecology, and Evolution publication stating that human DNA found floating in the air and water can be sequenced. I mean, this is huge. And the UF researchers who sequenced this widespread DNA say the findings are good for science and forensics, but possibly bad for ethics. Did you know that human DNA is everywhere? And it can be detected and plucked from the air and water. And then it can be sequenced to track whomever you want if you have their sample. Scientists have issued a warning after discovering complex DNA can be detected in the air, water, even from a footprint on a sandy beach. I spoke with one of the researchers on the team at the University of Florida who made the discovery, Dr. Jessica Farrell. All right, so this is really exciting news that you published today about this airborne DNA, I guess you call it eDNA, that you discovered while you were actually researching wildlife, and you found all this human DNA floating around out there.
Yes, of course. So yeah, our lab primarily focuses on sea turtle conservation, and in particular, a virus-associated cancer known as fibropapillomatosis, or FP. So a lot of our research revolved around trying to figure out ways in which we can mitigate this disease. And so one of the avenues of research for us was looking into environmental DNA, or eDNA, in which we took sand and water samples to see if we could detect sea turtle species within those samples, and then also the pathogens that are affecting them, such as the virus that is associated with this cancer. And as we were doing that, and we found success in that, we realized through our sequencing that we were actually collecting a lot of human eDNA as well. So some of our water samples came from the rehab tanks in our hospital facility here at the University of Florida's Whitney Lab. And we were expecting that we would have maybe found more human eDNA in those tanks, as we have our rehab staff interacting with the turtles on a daily basis because of their FP tumors. But in actual fact, we were inadvertently picking up a lot more human eDNA from samples in the environment, so in wild water or sand samples. So that was a real surprise to us, and kind of made us aware of the situation that there is a lot of human DNA out in the environment. And so when we realized that this was happening, we then looked into it a little bit more to see just how much human eDNA was out there and the quality of that human DNA. So in addition to water and sand samples, we collected air samples, and we were able to sequence human DNA from all those three types of substrates at much higher quantities and a much higher quality than we were expecting. And then I personally didn't work on the bioinformatics or the sequencing analysis. We've had Drs. Mark McCauley and Dr. Max Stamnitz looking into that, as well as Dr. Liam Whitmore. But they were able to identify mutations associated with the disease and even determine the genetic ancestry of nearby populations from these samples that we were getting just from the environment.
So this is really exciting stuff, and there's really some good applications for it. Can you list a few?
So some of the potential benefits that research and other fields can see in the future include population-based disease risk susceptibility studies. So we could use wastewater or air-based eDNA to look into pathogen surveillance and pathogen monitoring. And so this was done a little bit during the COVID-19 pandemic. The COVID virus was detected in wastewater samples, and it was able to predict certain areas that may be prone to future outbreaks. So that can be now done on an eDNA level. In terms of kind of a little bit less science-based and more perhaps real-world-based, forensic and criminal investigations could potentially use this in the future with a lot of optimizing and a lot of testing. In addition, it could help locate sites of archaeological significance in the future. So you'd be able to perhaps take sand samples or air samples and locate areas that you are looking for particular types of eDNA.
So exciting. What does this do? What does this do to consent, though? Because it's just literally out there floating in the air.
Yeah, so it's something that no one really was aware of it, or at least the scale of it, up until now. So one of the main priorities of getting this publication out is just to make people aware. And so whether they're in the scientific field or the policy making and the regulating field, they are aware that this information is out there. Probably one of the simplest solutions in terms of consent would be you can remove the human reads from the sequencing information that we're getting. So that could be a solution if people are particularly concerned that human genetic information is potentially being uploaded to these publicly available genetic databases. So it is possible to remove that human data from there before uploading. So that could be a potential solution in the future.
If you're looking for DNA in the air in a room, you vacuum it out of the air?
So we have very fine, they're called Sterovex filters. So it's very, very, very fine filter paper in a bit of a column. And so we place that filter paper in its column in a room, and this had voluntary participants in it. And we do attach a vacuum pump. I'm completely spacing on the brand or anything like that at the moment, but we do attach a vacuum pump. And for the purpose of this study, we left that running for about 2 to 3 hours. But what was really incredible is obviously it was a veterinary setting. And so the participants were wearing gowns and caps and gloves. So were as sterile as you could possibly make it within that setting. And human eDNA was still very readily detectable within the air just by using a filter column and a vacuum pump. So, yeah.
Well, that tells you something.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Good to know. Very good to know.
Good to know. Do you guys think you're going to win some sort of a Nobel Prize?
Oh, no, absolutely not. It's very funny. This paper originally just started off as a one-pager, and we were doing our details of research and thought, didn't realize that it was going to spiral into something like this. So, no, we're just very happy that we could get the information out there and make everyone aware, because it's really fascinating technology and can be used for really incredible purposes. And so we would like it to be used in as beneficial way as possible, whether that's for sea turtles or for humans.
Sea turtles or humans. Well, you certainly deserve a Nobel Prize, so I hope you get it.
I will let Dr. Duffy know. He'll be very happy to hear that.
Wow, thanks so much. I really appreciate your time, Jessica, and I'll call you back if I come up with more questions.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Okay, bye.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Now, this could be a vital breakthrough for when murderers refuse to reveal where they buried their victims. It allows DNA-seeking drones to find human remains in remote locations. But it does raise a lot of ethical problems. And that's why I have rounded up the top medical ethicist in the world, Dr. Arthur Kaplan from NYU. Welcome.
I'm ready.
So, Dr. Kaplan, first of all, I wanted to ask you if you've read the paper by the UF scientist Dr. David Duffy about this new airborne, waterborne DNA.
I have, and was very, very impressed and at the same time kind of worried by it.
Okay, so let's take that in two parts. What impressed you about it?
Our techniques that are out there for finding DNA are just getting increasingly sophisticated. What the study showed is that all of us, no matter how much we take a bath or shower or try to keep clean, we're constantly shedding cells from our body that contain our DNA. So it could wind up on our sheets, as we sometimes know from crime stories. It can wind up on the end of a cigar or a cigarette, but it's being exhaled. It's falling off our bodies when we walk barefoot. It's all over the place. And it's now possible, if you will, to find tiny amounts of those cells and pull DNA out of them.
Yeah, apparently the sequences recovered are both nuclear and mitochondrial from the regions of the human genome.
That's right. And the reason that's important is the mitochondria are like the little power units or batteries of the cell, but they contain only maternal or female DNA. So it gives you a real answer as to whether somebody was present in a particular place who was male or female. You can tell right away.
Right. So I am a little confused, though, because I thought DNA samples, you know, they often get mixed together, especially forensically at a crime scene. How would a single sample be isolated in the air?
Well, what you do is you vacuum it out. Oh. You literally take something like a suction vacuum and pull it out of the air. Now, if there's been a whole group of people present, I'm not sure you could say, aha, Art was there before Karen, who was there before Juan. I'm not sure you could really get that precise yet. But what you can do is, if I or a particular person has been in a particular place, you use that vacuum, you pull my DNA out of the air. I may have some other samples there, like seagulls and other creatures that have been going by. But in many instances, I can not only figure out that a human was there, I can figure out that it was me.
Wow. That's just mind-blowing. You know, I refer back to the Amanda Knox Italy murder trial where they used touch DNA, and that was such a nightmare. This is like touch DNA 2.0.
And this is basically, yes, it's the next level in investigation. But think about both the potential good things. If someone was missing, wandered off from a nursing home, you might be able to track them by not just putting a chip in them, but actually following a DNA path, figuring out where they might have gone if someone was lost on a hiking expedition or something. Same kind of idea. If you are in a situation where someone's trying to figure out is a lost child in an area, this could help. So some really positive uses and some negative ones. No one needs my permission or consent to go down to the beach, take samples near my footprints and figure out what was I doing that day. I said I was at work, but guess what? I'm not. I'm at the beach.
But can they time that and know that you were there at a certain day, at a certain hour, at a certain minute?
Well, they probably can't do that from the DNA, but they can probably do it from the surrounding soil sample or other environmental clues. So I'm looking to see, oh, look, these leaves have been here 2 days and here's Art's DNA sample. So clearly he was taking a hike, or maybe someone was forcing him into the woods at a particular time. I think the reconstruction, not only of identity, but time and place, if you put together all these new clues we have, sometimes. Not always, but sometimes.
Yeah, so Dr. David Duffy, he's from Wales, by the way, but he works at UF. He's a professor of wildlife disease genomics at the University of Florida. So he kind of stumbled upon this, didn't he?
Well, you know, what people have been doing for some time now is they've been sampling to establish the presence of animals, not individual ones, not identified ones, but just trying to figure out, did a bird go by here? Is there insects in the area? And they began to realize that they were leaving DNA in the air as well. It was only a matter of time before a bright scientist said, gee, I wonder if the humans are doing that too. So the technology has been around maybe a couple of years. It's just gotten to the point now where people have said, mainly who were studying animals, wait a minute, what about people?
Got it. Now, as a bioethicist, what concerns you about this?
I think I have three major concerns. First, people can get your DNA without your permission, I don't see anything that we can do about that. It's out in public places. It's out in the environment. It's in a room. It's floating around all over the place. It's going to be hard to say, gee, I took a sample of your DNA, but you didn't give your consent. I don't see how we're going to be able to enforce consent.
But I would need your permission to get your DNA to match it to the DNA that I got just in the air.
Well, maybe I do and maybe I don't. I might have a public database if I'm the police of everybody who committed a crime in the state of Florida, and I'm just going to run that DNA against that database, and I didn't need your permission to do that, say state laws. So even to get permission to check your DNA, maybe it's 23andMe, a private company where you set your DNA off voluntarily and gave them permission to use it, not always are they going to need consent. Second, it's going to be hard to just maintain your privacy. Obviously, people are going to be able to figure out, in many instances, where you've been and who you've been there with, whether it's a motel, a beach, a conference room, whatever. So there are plenty of private detectives and plenty of unscrupulous monitors who might begin to work that into, shall we call it, their detective kind of techniques. Mm-hmm. And then third, I think we'll be able to check and see for criminal purposes or sometimes employment purposes. You say you've been somewhere, and as I was joking earlier, I said I was at home sick, and somebody's now going to be able to prove that I was down at the beach playing volleyball. You know, I think there's a lot of, if you will, truth serum in that DNA that doesn't always work to our advantage.
Right. Well, the other thing is, you know, it could be misused by insurance companies with an interest in knowing if you are at risk for future illness and they won't cover you.
Sure. They could sample that way. And it's also the case, let's say I applied for disability benefits from my job. And now instead of having someone try to come out and see if I'm playing tennis, they just have to show that I spent time near the fitness club working out.
Huh. So if it rains, then everything's washed away. It's not still in the air, but it's in the water.
It's in the water. It's in the dirt. DNA probably out exposed to the sun due to the sun's rays. I'm going to guess 5-6 days. Okay. If it gets under the dirt or if someone covers it, you know, it can last hundreds of years, hundreds of years. That's why we see people saying things like, I'm going to dig up that mastodon and see if I can recreate it, even though it's extinct. If it somehow got caught in the frost, maybe I can extract its DNA and clone it and make one like it come to life.
Yeah, or, you know, a mosquito stuck in amber with the blood of a
mastodon. Or, dare I say it, how about you and me? What if they do wind up getting our DNA and being able to clone that someday?
Oh my gosh, between AI and this, I'm terrified. I think things are about to get really weird. I'm quoting Elon Musk.
Things can get weird, some of which we're going to have to start to push to legislate and regulate, some of which we're going to have to teach people to be responsible, and, you know, some of it we're going to have to put some pretty severe penalties on, like you reproduce me without my permission, you're facing life in jail. And I'm serious about that. I think we're going to have to toughen the penalties for abusing the use of DNA.
Wow. That is so fascinating. I just want to back up a little bit about the vacuuming of DNA. How long has that been available? How long have they been able to vacuum the DNA and just
people
separate?
People have been vacuuming DNA out of the air to trace animals to establish what species have been in an area for a couple of years. So my best guess is I would say probably around 4 or 5 years now. But this human application is brand new.
Yeah. And the water system, they can determine what kinds of human diseases are in a certain community?
Probably the best way to tell where's COVID or is polio coming back is to sample sewage. DNA from us is in there. That DNA often carries markers of viruses that have gotten into us. And I'm going to say that's becoming more and more the best way to track where an outbreak might have started or where it might not have completely disappeared.
Right. So do you think the benefits of being able to just pluck DNA out of the air and out of the water outweigh the ethical questions?
I think there's benefits. I think there's really some tough ethical questions, like with AI and chatbots. We've got to get ahead of them before they overtake us. We've got a little window to do that now, a couple of years to debate, you know, what penalties and regulations we want. But this technology is here. We're not going back, whether we like it, don't like it. This isn't a question of whether it's coming. It's here.
Yeah. And my big question to you, and we're speaking with Dr. Arthur Kaplan. He's a bioethicist and a professor at NYU. Do you think eventually every human will have their DNA on a database? I mean, it seems inevitable.
I think it is inevitable. And there are some angles on privacy that we're just going to have to realize. Sadly, they're from the 20th century, the 19th century. We can't have that anymore. It's too easy to find our DNA. We're just sloughing it off. It's falling off of us, coming out of us all the time. There's not much we can do about that. And so we're going to have to construct maybe a different idea of privacy.
Well, and the thing about HIPAA laws, I mean, if this stuff's readily available, you can figure out what's wrong with Jamie Foxx, you know, or
absolutely.
If someone's got
absolutely
a certain...
Absolutely right. So all I need to do, I don't even need you. I might just get a pillow, a sheet, something you sat on, like a wheelchair, someone carried you into the hospital on a gurney. Yeah, I can probably find out a lot.
Oh, that's terrifying. You know, I think you're right about the idea of privacy has just gone out the window.
Privacy's not doing well. I'd say if it's not dead, these kinds of technologies are starting to make it look pretty comatose.
And so if they clone you, will you grant me an interview?
Well, you know, even if they did clone me, it will still be my clone's right to say yes or no. So even though they might look like me and sound like me, at the end of the day, they still have their own free will. So we'll have to see.
That's the thing. We have our free will. Yes. But how many people are, you know, how readily available is this technology right now? I mean, it's not like everyone can do it at every lab.
Right. So now it's just kind of a special skill. You need a lot of technical know-how to do it. But I would give it a few years, and I think you'll see it in the hands of the police, detective agencies, by the way, immigration services, employers. I think it'll disseminate out pretty quick. You know, what a human scientist with a vacuum cleaner-like thing is running around with today becomes a mechanical robot sniffer with an automated reader tomorrow.
It's like Stanley Steamer's going to go collect DNA. You know, you go back
That's
to
right.
Amanda Knox, though, the touch DNA on the knife and the bra strap. That worked out poorly for them. I mean, it wasn't really, they couldn't tell when it was put there.
Correct. So not every question can be answered, even if you find some DNA. It may be critical to know, was that something that happened when they went out on a date, or was that happen, you know, 3 months later when allegedly she was murdered by him? We can't quite get there with that. But remember, sometimes you can do the dating because it isn't just the DNA. It can be, I've got a receipt. I know that you checked into that room and there's your DNA on that clothing. Then you may be able to advance the cases further.
And it's in the room.
And it's in the room.
Right. So, you know, you can, it's much easier to determine if I've been in a room is that you would smell my Chanel Mademoiselle perfume.
There you go. There you go.
So just finally capping everything off, what is your biggest fear right now as a bioethicist?
Well, I worry that we're going to be in a situation where people surveil us, monitor us, know where we've been, know a lot about what we've been up to, know a lot about who we've been with, and we don't know that they know.
Ah, yeah. Do they know that you know that I know? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That it's scary.
And then add
AI on top of that.
Well, the AI is always there as the fastest way to run existing databases against your new sample, right? So you don't have to wait 3 months to get the test result back, maybe you have to wait 3 seconds.
Wow. This is like putting instant coffee in a microwave and going back in time. this is crazy, and there's no way that the law can keep up with it. There's just no way legislation.
I think the law historically has tried to keep up with it by saying, you can't share information, you can't do this, you need consent. I think we're going to have to shift more toward penalties. If you do this, you're going to jail. If you do that, you're going to get a long prison sentence. You can't really rely on protection when you have these kind of technologies. What you start to have to do is say, we're going to penalize you if you do it.
Yes, I see. More penalty rather than consent, because that's the way that's the direction we're headed in. All right, Dr. Kaplan, anything you want to add?
No, I think that's scary enough for most people on a afternoon.
Thank you so much. Appreciate all that you do.
Hey, send me a link if you use it.
Absolutely. I will send it right
away. All righty.
Okay, thanks.
Bye now. Bye.
Hope you enjoyed this new episode after my 1 year hiatus. Many more to come, my friend. So stay tuned. Full Rigor is back. Thanks for listening. Until next time.